Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 37 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about, are fossil fuels holding us back? It's the climate change episode, the climate crisis episode. Joining me, as always, is Blue Alabama's Michael. Michael, are you ready to save the planet?
Of course. I'm always ready to save the planet.
Climate crisis is one of those issues that it's kind of amazing that we don't talk about it more, really, because, I mean, this is our Big Things trilogy. Last week, we talked about education, this week climate crisis, and next week media. But with education, you're kind of talking about they're not getting the skills they need when they're young. And with media, you're talking about, well, both of those are kind of perception, really, because you're not getting told the full truth or you're not getting told everything you need to know. With climate crisis, it's straight up the end of the world. Not to put too fine a point on it, but it probably is the biggest issue of our times.
Yeah.
Kind of amazing that you might turn on the news and you may not see a single story about it for a month at a time.
You know, it's hard to really fit in something as, you know, gloom and doom as climate crisis when we have another crisis on our hands with, you know, Brad and Angelina breaking up.
I know it. I mean, I don't even know why you brought that up. I mean, I can hardly lift my head out of the off the pillow in the morning time. Sunk me in a despair that I could hardly... What do you think about Jennifer Aniston being like, see, told you so, and it's just like, really, get over it.
Yeah.
You're married like 20 years ago for 4 years. I mean, Brad and Angelina had like 18 kids or something like that. I'm like, really? I mean, you know, I mean, I don't think Jennifer Aniston is the love of his life. Like, I'm sure Brad Pitt looks at it and he's like, damn, that girl needs to move on, you know? She's got a husband now and everything. I'm sure that dipshit she married, that... Justin Theroux, the star of The Leftovers, he's probably looking at it like, man, what does the guy got to do to, you know, he's sitting there like, every time they have a fight, it's like, you didn't get enough paper towels today. Well, I bet Brad Pitt got paper towels. Oh, wait, he never did? Yeah, should have. So, no matter what goes on, they're probably having that quarrel. But when you said that there's another big disaster living on our shores, I thought you were going to say Donald Trump or something. Hurricane Trump was about to hit us. I guess that's the thing about climate crisis. It always kind of seems like it's on the back burner because there's always something more immediate. ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and I mean, most of these are disasters that we've created. Not unlike climate crisis, actually. They're man-made disasters. So I guess when you're talking about, like, climate crisis 6 weeks before the election, everybody's like, who cares about that? You got Trump. But it is the biggest issue of our times. And I think, just like with education, you had Democrats. The worst you could say about Democrats is that they don't do enough. But Republicans don't even have the ballpark of the right decisions and everything. It's the same with climate crisis, where you can say, the worst you can say is like, yeah, Hillary's not great about fracking, and Tim Kaine is kind of not great about environmental issues, period. But then you got Trump, who doesn't even acknowledge that climate crisis is real. He doesn't even think it's happening. I mean, when we talk about things that make us liberals or make us Democrats, I mean, there's things like education and abortion, things like that. But I mean, climate crisis and the environmental issues, that's really where you separate us, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. Because, I mean, like you were saying, it's something that, you know, Republicans, not just Donald Trump, Republicans as a whole, they just really don't believe that global warming is an issue.
No, and so you can tell that Republicans are full of shit about this issue because what they say about it changes all the time. You can tell that they are wrong about it, and you can tell that they kind of know that they're wrong about it because in any given week, you might hear Trump, he just says it's not happening flat out. He says it's a hoax by China to slow our economy. That is one hell of a hoax. I mean, if China's able to do, you know, like I can just see China over there like, yeah, we're all dying from cancer because we put so much shit up in the air. Put some more shit up in the air, China. And so I can just see them being like, we're all slowly killing ourselves just so we can hurt the U.S. economy by polluting the air so much that it hurts us. I mean, a lot of Chinese people are getting throat cancer because their whole air supply is ruined, their water supply is ruined. I've been lucky enough to go to Shanghai a couple of times, but it looks like Blade Runner. I mean, the sky is so polluted and foggy. There are certain days where you can't even see the sun, and it's not like London where it's fog. It's just smog.
Yeah.
It's flat-out pollution. So you hear him say, well, this is not happening at all. It's a hoax by China. You hear other Republicans be like, oh, well, the science isn't in yet. The science isn't in yet. There's still doubt. There's still room for doubt. You hear other people be like, well, even if it is happening, isn't it kind of nice that the planet's getting warmer? It's not so cold all the time. So I mean, they kind of make it seem like it's somehow like a tourism hotspot. They're like, hey, you can go to Alaska in May now, and it's not so bad. I mean, they kind of make it seem like it's not really that big a deal. I went on a cruise to Alaska a couple of years ago. It was unbelievable how dirty it looked. Like, some of the glaciers were like fucking pavement moving down the road. I mean, they had like black lung. They had soot and black crap. So smog and all the pollution that goes and gets trapped in the glaciers, and then they become dirtier, they become less white,
yeah.
and then they absorb more heat, and it melts them even faster.
Right.
It keeps going in a worse and worse cycle. If people go on a cruise to Alaska 20 years from now, it'll be like going on a cruise to the Caribbean just about. And then you got people that keep saying things like, well, even if it's real, China and India, they're not going to do a thing about it. And even if it's real, even if it's man-made, what is America going to do? Because China and India, they're just going to pollute more. That is the worst fucking answer, I think. I mean, that may be worse because that is such a third grade. Hey, the other kid did it. He did it too. The other kid punched me first.
Yeah,
I mean, what do you think of this idea that, like, the United States, which always wants to lead and always wants to be first in everything. Hey, China and India, fellas, our hands are tied. I mean, what do you think of that attitude, really?
This is really the only issue that I can think of that people have this mindset on. I mean, really, could you imagine if the United States was like, the United States is wanting to pass a ban on abortion. Well, we could do that, but, you know, China and India, you know, they're not going to do it, so we're not going to do it.
It's funny that conservatives make that argument, because usually it's us, liberals, who have to be like, hey,
yeah.
we're the only country who doesn't have health insurance. Hey, we're the
yeah.
only country who has automatic weapons floating around. Hey,
yeah.
we're the only country that, like you said, with abortion, literally every industrialized nation has abortion. Like, if we banned it, we'd be the only industrialized country in the world.
Right.
So usually it's liberals having to be like, look at what the rest of the world does, guys. Why are we? And so for conservatives who are usually like, we'll be the only ones that ban abortion outright. We have the most right-wing healthcare system in the world. That's okay. China and India, fellas, we're impotent. We're just helpless. I mean, let's drop our pants
yeah.
now and little Chinese guy come in here and buttfuck us. I mean, like, I've never heard this before. They're usually the ones that are actively military. If the world's not what we want it to be, we can make it what we want it to be. Oh, we don't like ISIS, we're going to go bomb ISIS. Hey, I'm sure it's just a matter of time before somebody, they keep floating this argument around. You're going to have a Tea Party member be like, you know what we're going to do? Declare a war on Chinese smog, and then we're invading Beijing or something. Any other time, our military, conservatives don't think that way. They don't necessarily think, like, this is what the rest of the world's doing, and we can't do anything about it. They think, be like what we want you to be. If you don't, and if you get too far off the beaten path, we're going to blow you up. And really, it's funny, because this is kind of a national security issue. Let's get into that a little bit, because, again, it's not really people's fault, because the media doesn't explain this at all, but a lot of what we're seeing with the global conflicts in the Middle East is because of drought. It's because of global warming.
Yeah.
Really, the entire Arab Spring started in Tunisia. There had been some droughts and the villagers and the farmers and stuff. It all kind of broke down to where it was this big divide between the rural areas that had always been dependent on agriculture and all their crops were dying because of the drought and things like that.
Right.
And the urban
right.
areas, all these governments. So you started seeing the Arab Spring sweep in there, and it was democracy and all that stuff, but it was really more like, okay, we got to do something because we're dying and we're all going to flood into the cities and there's going to be more of us than there will be jobs. And
yeah.
that's what happened in Syria. There was a drought that went on for years, and a lot of the Sunni insurgents that you're seeing come into Syria, which is really just Damascus, that was because of a drought. You saw that going on way before ISIS ever showed up. But we don't ever think about it this way in terms of political instability led by global warming. But it is. I mean, really, they are connected.
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem that most people have with this is you can point to something physical when you're talking about terrorism. You can point
right.
to, you know, they have nuclear weapons or they have this or that. With global warming, you can see it, but it's not something that you can physically, like, look at and feel and touch. You can show the evidence, but you can't touch it. Like, you can't touch global warming. You can't kill it. So, like, they struggle with that. They struggle with having that abstract concept of something that they're having to fight against.
I could just see, like, Trump sending in the military and, like, there's 100,000 troops that show up. We're going to fight global warming, you know, and they're, like, looking around and trying to find, like, a literal smog monster. They get their flamethrowers out. We're going to burn that smog monster up, you know. Trump watches Godzilla and thinks it's a literal movie of what's going on. It's like, oh, my God. Get carriers out to Japan. We got to do something about this. But I get what you're saying, where it's funny because, in a way, it's the most abstract issue. It's very abstract in that way. And then, on the other hand, it's the end of the world, so it's not abstract at all, you know? So it's sort of like two competing
yeah.
issues. It's abstract. It's Salvador Dali until it gets to the point where it's Mad Max. And then it's fucking serious, and it's literal and it's real. I guess it's hard for people to really understand it, because when you see a hurricane, like Hurricane Sandy hits New York, and it's hard for people to draw that connection between this is global warming and this is a hurricane that wipes out New
yeah.
York City. And they can't draw that connection, and people keep saying the water levels will rise, the water out on the Atlantic Ocean is going to get warmer, you're going to see more hurricanes, more superpowered hurricanes, basically the Wall Street area is going to be Venice, where you're going to have like a few feet of water at the base of these skyscrapers. People are going to take gondola rides everywhere. And it's hard for people to really draw that connection until it's too late and it happens. And right now, like in a country like Bangladesh, you're seeing people basically complete overcrowding, where like the majority of the country is on the sea level. And I mean, that's one of the most populated countries in the world. And so if that country floods, and there's all these people who can't go anywhere, they're going to flood into India, maybe try to get into Pakistan. India's already got armed guards on the border. So this is all a recipe for instability. People that are worried about ISIS, they're worried about Al-Qaeda, they're worried about these threats. These threats are nothing when you have 100 million Nigerians or Bangladeshis or Indians that have nowhere to go, and they're flooding into any bordering country they can, using any means they can to get there.
Yeah, definitely. So.
And I think when we talk about, you know, who's to blame and the villains, this is where Republicans, they don't like this idea of assigning blame for once. Or any other thing, they like it. But when it comes to this, they're real vague about it. Like, I think you're right, where it's abstract enough to where you need a visual enemy. Like, you need to visualize somebody. And this isn't like most issues where we can kind of point to 1% of people. Like, we can't point to, like, Wall Street. Or we can point to Wall Street a little bit, but we can't just point to them. It's one of those things to where people have to kind of look at like you know those big ass SUVs driving down the road, they get like 2 miles to a gallon.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that person who drives that, they're responsible, kind of. We don't want to think about it that way, but it's something where people have to. Individuals are not the main cause of global warming, and we'll get into that in a minute, but there is some individual responsibility. Like, it's not something where you're like, hey, credit default swaps, I don't understand them. People can understand that their car gets no fucking gas mileage and it's powered by coal. You know what I mean? They can understand that, but driving down the road. Yeah. So in Los Angeles, it's a big car culture. It's funny, because different cities I lived in, they got different car cultures. People in Alabama, they drive longer distances. But in L.A., you might have a traffic jam that goes on for hours, and you see all these huge-ass SUVs. I mean, a lot of our neighbors and a lot of the people that are around us or whatever, they got these gigantic-ass SUVs that there's really no use for because the parking spaces are so narrow. I'll see one of our neighbors come in on this. It looks like a fucking white bus. I mean, this looks like it's an SUV, but it looks like Moby Dick on wheels, this big-ass thing coming around the corner. I kind of thought the era of this was over with, but I couldn't go outside to the apartment building my complex right now, I probably see 3 or 4 Hummers. And I kind of didn't even know that they still made Hummers. You know, like, I kind of was like surprised that I was still seeing so many.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that gas is so low that people are starting to be able to, you know, drive these big cars again. Maybe that was Hummer's plan all along. It's like, as soon as gas gets lower, then we'll start making more.
Kind of like a catch-22, to where it's like when gas goes up to $4 a gallon and it's outrageous, and it's the Bush administration or whatever, people are just like, oh my God, we gotta economize, we gotta buy smaller cars, we gotta think about gas mileage. So the gas prices are a disaster, but then when they go low enough, and they've been low for years like they have been with Obama or whatever, people go out, they'll buy Priuses or whatever, they'll buy, like, you know, Tesla's coming out with the model people can actually afford and everything. They're like, oh my God, let's go out and get a boat that's powered by coal and we can shovel fucking diesel fuel into it. And they go out there and get these, like, monstrous ass, I don't even know what these cars are called. There's the Hummers and there's the Escalades, but then there's just these cars out there that, I mean, they're SUVs, but they look like a bread truck on wheels that's sleek and shiny, and they probably get, I mean, you get behind them, you almost see the damn fumes coming out of this thing. Yeah. I could see one pull into a Chevron, filling up all the way, and then drives 2 miles down the road. It's like, oh, there's a Shell, we better stop. And they get more, you know, they get more gas. LA's a car culture. There's traffic jams everywhere. People are awful fucking drivers. I think that's the biggest downside to LA, is that it feels like they're hosting a year-round horrible driver convention. I mean, half the cars out here, I expect them to have, like, you know, those driver's ed stickers or something. Yeah. I expect them to have, like, driver's ed stickers or explain why they're so bad at driving. But they, I mean, people will come to a dead stop at a yellow light. They're turning. They don't have their blinker on. You know, a signal is one of those things I consider useful information. Like, when people use their blinker, their signal, that's great information to have. They'll be going straight, and then they're going to turn, but they don't turn on their blinker. They just swerve left, and they just, like, ah, fuck it, pull out blinkers. So when you're stuck driving all day, and I'm not even really driving, like, you have a commute, and so we'll talk about driving a little bit. I don't even have a commute. Like, I'm going like 2 miles down the road, so the fact that it takes 30 minutes is insane. I'm literally not even leaving 10 miles, and it may take me all day to get from one place to another. You have a long commute, and if we were experts on education last week, we know a little bit about driving.
Yeah, definitely.
I could say you're our driving correspondent.
Yeah, because I have hour and 15 minutes commute every day back and forth to work. Yeah, I'm pretty experienced with driving.
I mean, I think we both have cars that are pretty fuel efficient, and that's something we thought about. But when I used to talk about, like, driving a Toyota or whatever, I don't want one of them rice burners. I don't want one of them rice rockets. And I'm like, it's a Toyota Camry. Calm down. Cletus or whatever. But I just, like, relax. But I'd be like, yeah, I can't wait to get, like, a hybrid, maybe an electric car or something like that. And I just always remember guys all down and be like, ah, they ain't got no horsepower. What are you doing pulling up stumps? I mean, what are you doing that you need all this horsepower? I mean, one of the big things to do when we were in high school was guys would go to Walmart and they'd treat the Walmart parking lot like the fucking Talladega 500. They'd just be doing donuts out there, like driving around the parking lot. And I thought, you know, you hear all these guys talk about horsepower and stick. They wouldn't have automatics. They'd have a stick shift. And it was all stupid. Like, and all the horsepower they're getting is from one red light to another 1 mile down the road, and like you can't go anywhere, even in Alabama, which is great because most of the speed limit signs are like 65 miles an hour, which is amazing. That's preferable. Yeah. You know, I mean, in LA, if you get above 35 miles an hour, it's just like, whoa, where's the fire at? I mean, you think a bit the other way around, where you got Los Angeles and a fast paced lifestyle, but I mean, inside the city, it's impossible to get above 45 miles an hour. I mean, I don't know if I've ever been above 60, but in Alabama, you've got all these great, fuck it, let's just make it 25 miles an hour speed limits, and people can really go. Even on that case, a Toyota Camry can get there just as easily as a Camaro, or just as easily as an Escalade. In fact, I can probably get there faster than an Escalade or a Hummer or something like that, a Tahoe.
Yeah, probably.
So, I mean, what is really the advantage? I know it's not fuel economy. I know it's not speed. What is really the advantage to some of these bigger cars that get horrible gas mileage, do you think? Status, mostly.
Yeah, I think so. I think status. I mean, a lot of people will say, you know, well, I have a big family, but at the same time, like, your Escalade is going to sit five people just like your
Toyota
Camry. So
when you actually get in an SUV, like, we're both tall people at home. I mean, we're both like 6'4" in that area. So I mean, like, my Toyota Camry is kind of comical because I got a sunroof. I got a spoiler on the back and a sunroof, so people laugh sometimes. They're like, where are you going, Fast and Furious? You know, but I can lift the sunroof back. I could, like, stick my head out the top and I can go down the street. Sometimes when I'm, like, really tired of being cooped up in a car or whatever, I'll, like, stick my head out the top and drive with my eyeballs over it or whatever and drive. I can just imagine, like, somebody looking at me doing that. But so, I mean, you do have to kind of, like, pack yourself in and out. But the problem with an SUV, it's the same thing. Because when I used to get in, like, you know, like SUVs, the way that they're built, like, they're higher off the ground, but their bottoms are higher off the ground, too. So, like, you don't really, you're not really gaining that much space. You're just driving higher up off the ground, but in terms of, like, headroom, legroom, overall room, the cars look like they have more space than they really do. All of this space, and then you get inside them, and there's no elbow room. I mean, the only car that's really got that much space is a Honda Element, which most people refuse to drive because it's ugly, but it's got a lot of room. Like, it's got a lot of room. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the Honda Element and stuff like that. I mean, like, the Chevy Tahoes, the Suburbans, all these cars. And when you really get in them, I mean, in terms of room, when people say that, they go, I got a big family. I'm like, oh, well, you could buy a minivan and sit twice a minute. I'm not buying that. That car's fucking ugly, you know? So I really don't think it's, like, this room argument.
Yeah, I agree.
But, I mean, when we get into global warming, part of it is so overwhelming. Because it seems like every day there's a new story. It's kind of like the medical field where it's just like, oh, it turns out salt's even worse for you than you thought it was or whatever. With global warming, it's like, it turns out your ink pen is contributing to it and you killed 10 trees to buy that ink pen. But there's like a new story every day. The last couple of years, I didn't even realize that, like, apparently beef and eating meat is bad for the environment.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact ratio, but there's something like 5 pounds of grain for every 1 pound of meat that you eat or something like that. So when you're raising cows and pigs, they eat so much grain, and it's like that is a depletion on the agriculture. And it's got to be cars. It's got to be fracking. It's got to be coal. It's got to be, like, there's 15 things. And then somebody's like, you know, it's that hamburger you eat. Oh, fuck off. Really? A hamburger? Come on. You know? So when you, it feels like no matter what you're doing, there's some way that you're contributing to the demise of the planet.
Yeah.
In terms of the environment, and how to protect it, and how to save it, how to do better. Where do you think is a good place to start?
Well, I think we should all be vegans and driving Priuses, of course.
What if when I ask you that question, I just heard a gunshot? Michael, are you there? You know, the agricultural arguments about beef production. Yeah, okay. I feel like the people who spread that, they probably work for Shell. or Exxon, because I know that contributes to global warming. I know there's a lot of things to do. I know when I use, like, dryer for my clothes instead of just hanging them out on the line, that contributes to it. And I use the oven when I could just, like, use a match or something. I don't even know what they want you to do. But, I mean, I know there's a lot of things that you do. I know when I use paper instead of an email. But there's a lot of things that you could do that could help. But it really boils down to fuel. I mean, like, really the big one. Because when people are kind of talking about, and it's all done by Exxon, it's all done by Shell, it's all done by these oil companies and these fracking companies and these coal companies, because they don't want to accept their blame for this. Like, they don't want to kind of get into, it's kind of like when Big Tobacco, and everybody was like, well, you know, healthcare costs are skyrocketing because of Big Tomato. Well, it could be Big Tobacco, but what about the sunscreen industry? They could be making higher SPS, right? Skin cancer, right? How does the sun factor into lung cancer going up 400%? I don't know, buddy. I'm not a scientist. When you get into fuel, because that's the main one, I really believe. I believe if you could get rid of fossil fuels completely, it may not end global warming, but it would certainly help. I mean, it would be
really
the biggest one. Pose the question, are fossil fuels holding us back? Because we always hear the argument that we need them. The economy is going to collapse if we don't have them. Are they holding us back?
In a way, I think to an extent they're holding us back. People have to understand a couple of things. And one of those things is that innovation doesn't come about when you have an alternative. There's not going to be a demand for a new type of fuel source or something to power whatever it is we're using oil for if we have a ton of oil that we're using. So I think if you can get rid of that, you're going to be forced to innovate and be forced to, you know, dive into research. And, I mean, companies like Exxon can lead this. They could develop alternative, you know, fuel sources and move away from fossil fuels. Till we pull the plug on that, on fossil fuels, you know, we're not really going to be making the research and investments that we need to be doing.
I don't really think that ExxonMobil is ever going to be part of the solution to this problem.
No, I mean, I'll tell
you why I say that, because I think, like, the temptation is, so let's say you had President Brody, right? Let's say I was in the White House or something, and I was like, I got to get around climate crisis. This is killing everything. It's just the number one issue. How do we get around this? You call ExxonMobil and a few of the oil companies into the office and say, guys, you could be part of the green revolution. You could make solar power. You could make wind power. You could do nuclear power. I don't care what you use as long as you get off fossil fuels. They're not ever going to do that because alternative energy, after a few years, it pays for itself and it's essentially free. They don't really ever want to do that because you can't control scarcity. Like with alternative energy, there's no scarcity. The reasons that we need it and the reasons it would be good for us as consumers are the reasons they hate it, because it's abundant, it's renewable, there's no scarcity. You can't control it. On the oil markets, you sell oil as a commodity. It's $80 a barrel. Well, what's the price of sun for a barrel? The sun ratio, like, how do you put that on the commodity market? You can't.
Yeah.
What they want for oil and natural gas and coal, they want that expensive process. They want you to have to go and dig a well and then start mining it and start extracting it and pulling it out. And it's about that just $1 million process of extraction. And you got to extract the oil and you got to refine the oil. You got to turn it into gas. You got to send it out there. And all that is billions of dollars in distribution and extraction costs. It's all too expensive for, like, you and me. Like, me and you, we can't start Brody and Michael's oil refinery. We can't just go out there and get, like, a truck. Even if I had oil in my backyard, we couldn't go out there and be like, they found the oil, now we're going to be business. You have to contract that out. You have to get other people to help you. You have to do a lot of things that you really don't have to do with solar power, because with solar power, it's like, oh, two guys with a tech background, and maybe they work in Silicon Valley, maybe they work in Austin, Texas, maybe they work in Huntsville, Alabama, and they used to work for a defense contractor, and they use their technical skills to build a new microchip. They're like, oh, hey, this solar panel that we made can get 20% more and absorb more, and it's cheaper, and we can make it cheaper, and it's less toxic into the environment to make it.
Yeah.
Assuming we were actually able to make that and get it out there before somebody killed us, we would be able to basically help people. It allows too many innovators and entrepreneurs into it in a way that fossil fuels and extraction, they just don't allow that kind of competition and growth, which is why they want to keep it that way. Whenever we talk about, like, China and India, and they're not going to do anything, they're not going to help, that's bullshit. China is actively trying to do something different. because they don't have the oil reserves that a lot of countries do. Like, they're the number one populated place on the planet, and you could argue that the only reason their economy hasn't surpassed America already, instruments say that they have surpassed us in some regards, but by leaps and bounds, smoked us, is they can't get the oil that they need to grow. So it's really in their best interest to shift to alternative energy because they do have mineral mines. They have that rare earth minerals that are used in all the processing ships for solar panels, for windmills. They have deposits of things you need for nuclear power. So they are actually in a better position to swap to alternative energy than America is. So it really is in their best interest because, I mean, first of all, their health care costs are obscene because so many of their population, especially in the cities, is getting cancer from all the smog and pollutants and things. And then they also need to switch to alternative energy because they could do that. Like, they can't really, they don't have enough oil that they can export it. They do have enough rare earth minerals that they could extract those out of the ground and export that to other places. Like, they may eventually have solar panels and windmills, geothermal technology, nuclear technology. They may have these things that we want to buy eventually, but they'll never have so much oil that they can export it to us. So they actually are going to do something about this probably before we do. So that argument doesn't even wash on that level. Here's the argument. People always say, you can't get rid of fossil fuels because people are going to lose their jobs. We talked a little bit about, I don't remember what episode it was, but they always said, oh, well, coal miners. Obama's declared a war on coal, and all these coal miners, they're losing their jobs. Good. Coal mining is one of the worst, shittiest, most awful jobs you can imagine. I can't imagine anybody. If you told a coal miner, be like, hey, you can go work at Home Depot as a manager and make just as much money. You still want to be a coal miner? Fuck no. There might be one guy out of 10 that would say, I still want to be a coal miner.
Yeah.
Now, with the automation of these coal mines, you're not going to see that many coal miners anyway. The healthcare costs are too high. Coal miners drop dead at 50. Usually they don't drop dead. They get black lung and lung cancer, so they're really expensive healthcare costs. And the coal mining outfits have started automating a lot of these jobs anyway because robots don't get lung cancer, so they don't cost as much. And in 20 years, you may not see coal miners anyway in terms of the way we think about them.
Yeah. Coal mines are really only in a handful of states.
Yeah. And so when people say, oh, well, we've got clean coal, like in Montana, they're like, oh, well, we've got clean coal. Now we can take the coal out and we can pump the CO2 back in the ground. No. It's just trying to find another way to keep coal into the economy, which it doesn't need. We don't need it. I mean, we've got nuclear power, we've got solar, we've got wind. And that's something that people always talk about. They talk about how getting rid of coal and oil and gas, it kills jobs. We don't talk about all the jobs we kill anyway, because more than one-sixth of American jobs is dependent on agriculture. So when you talk about farming, ranching, fisheries, park rangers, like you're talking, at least one-fifth of American jobs are somewhat dependent on a good environment. We can talk about Gulf Coast. There used to be all these shrimp boats that would go out there and they would collect all the shrimp, all the fisherman jobs that would be along the coast. When the BP oil spill happened and it just polluted the shit out of that, all those jobs went away. And that was so what? I mean, you had a few hundred roughnecks out on these oil rigs and you had 10, 20, 30 times that many people employed by the fisherman jobs. People going out there with a net, collecting shrimp, crawdads, fish, and because they sprayed Corexit all through the water, a lot of the fish were getting tumors. Like, they were pulling shrimp out of the water that had fucking tumors on them. So even the few fishermen that still had jobs or whatever, they didn't really have jobs because a lot of places outside the South wouldn't buy Gulf Coast shrimp and Gulf Coast fish. They didn't want them. So an industry that was virtually wiped out overnight because of one environmental disaster.
Right.
And I don't know that BP has hired all, I mean, it's a company. It's a for-profit company, and they're not going to hire more people than they need, so they're not going to go out there and say, hey, you thousands of fishermen that were laid off, we're going to hire each and every one of you to work for BP and give you a paycheck. They made settlements, and they gave those people some money, but it wasn't what they lost in terms of a job to pay off for generations.
I mean, even if they could give these people jobs, why would they? Yeah, it's kind of a, you know, get your rig set up, get everything in ready to go, and it kind of works itself.
Right.
You just need a handful of people there to oversee stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're dealing with is that this argument of, oh, well, these are good jobs and you're going to be killing jobs. These jobs are going to be killing themselves throughout the next 25 years, basically, through automation. Because the more that they do this, every time that they do this, they get more automated, more robots come in, do more of these jobs. I mean, the amount of people it used to take to do an oil rig was a lot more 50 years ago than it is right now. It's going to get less and less and less. They figure with robots and things like that, they're not as likely to get injured on the job. So you're basically talking about jobs that are going to eventually delete themselves anyway. And in the meantime, we're all going to die. A few thousand people could have jobs for 10 more years before they eventually got laid off anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a good trade-off. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's me. But it doesn't seem like we're really getting a good deal out of that.
No, it's not just you.
So let's talk about fracking a little bit. Because the Democrats, they're in a rock and a hard place. Because Big Oil has so much money that they could essentially beat all of them. I mean, ExxonMobil is one of the most profitable corporations in America, and they contribute 92% of the money that they contribute goes to Republicans. For an example, a company like Walmart, that people think is mostly a conservative company, they only give about 53 or 4% to Republicans. Like, big companies usually are pretty split, because you have to be. Most big companies just back the incumbent in that area, so they just get behind an incumbent because they want to have favors when they get in it. So a big company like Walmart, Amazon, these kind of companies, they don't necessarily favor one political party over another. ExxonMobil, one of the biggest, most profitable companies in America, for them to give almost 10-to-1 dollars to Republicans as Democrats, that's huge. They could afford to do even more than that if they want to. You're talking about all the coal companies, all the oil companies, they mostly line up behind the Republican Party. So Democrats were kind of stuck. They're like, we can't basically just receive no money from fuel companies, and most solar power and wind power companies, they're not profitable enough. Like, we have to give them money. Like, usually the government has to write them checks because they're in the startup stages. They're not profitable yet, most of them. They're pre-revenue. So they can't afford to write Hillary's super PAC $10 million. They just can't do it. So they kind of had to start aligning with natural gas companies. Now, that's not ideal for a lot of different reasons, but their argument was, well, natural gas, it pollutes less than coal does. Now, that may be technically true that there's less CO2 emissions, but with natural gas and fracking, you're polluting two different ways, because you're not just polluting when you release that crap out of the air, you're polluting when you have to get it out in the first place, because you have to dump so many chemicals into the water to basically force that gas out of the water. Most of the towns you go through and do fracking, there's no way to fully control which chemicals get into the reservoir. I'm not saying every town that they've ever fracked in has had chemical spills into their water, but so many of them have that to me it's not a good trade-off. To me, it's probably worse than coal just in terms of the environmental damage to the region.
Right.
And I mean, not to mention, there was an earthquake in Texas not long ago, and everybody's like, what caused the earthquake? What caused the earthquake? Fracking. It's not that hard to figure out.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, they had a map of Oklahoma, and they're like, since Oklahoma started fracking, earthquakes have gone up 4,000%. We don't know why. And I'm like, oh, like, listen to a state like Oklahoma, which is not earthquake central. I mean, Oklahoma is not known for earthquakes. I mean, it used to be that it just sucks because of how bad it was, and they had tornadoes. And I'm like, really? Oklahoma's got tornadoes and drought, and now they've got earthquakes. They don't have enough problems. But it's amazing that that's now become earthquake central, and it's 100% due to fracking. That there's no way you can say they're not related. So it's fracking. And the fact that they're still doing it and they haven't shut it down. Hell, in Los Angeles, you talk about California as a blue state. We have a Democratic governor. We have a Democratic state house and state senate. The Republican Party is pretty much dead in California. And yet we have fracking in Los Angeles. And we're talking about not that far from a fault line. You see in the movie San Andreas, I mean, you watch all these earthquake movies, you're sitting there watching The Rock, you know, fly a fucking boat over a tidal wave or some nonsense or whatever, and it's like, oh man, this is crazy. And right outside, some asshole could hit the fracking fault line the wrong way, and they'd be like, oh well, we're living the movie. I used to see somebody watching San Andreas in the movie theater, and then the theater's like cracking apart, the ceiling's falling in. Man, these special effects are awesome. Because it's just, I mean, you're talking about sinkholes. I mean, California has got mudslides, sinkholes, wildfires, and now we're going to add, oh, hey, let's go out here with a giant-ass drill and go over this fault line right here. Let's pump a lot of chemicals and see if we can shift these plates around just enough that it releases enough gas. Let's do it harder so we can see if these plates can shift around just enough. What are we doing? I mean, when it comes to this fracking bullshit, I mean, what are we doing, really?
Right.
It's not a solution. People only go to fracking. I feel like it's a solution the oil companies and coal companies came up with because, like I said before, with natural gas, you go back to the scarcity thing. You can have scarcity. You can have distribution. You can have a pipeline. It's not renewable. It's going to run out eventually. It's too expensive for Cletus and Bubba to get in a pickup truck and go get that shit. You know, like, it's too expensive for most people to really get into it at the ground floor. It's another way to control energy and control the supply pipeline at home. really think about it. If you had completely alternative energy, like if you had, I designed a long time ago, this was like in college, but you could design an electric car where basically the rotation of the wheels is creating enough mechanical energy that it converts it into electric energy to power that battery. Basically, you're driving your car down the road, the axles are turning, there's enough mechanical energy that gets converted into electricity that refuels that battery. So that's an electric car that barely needs a charge. You might have to charge it once or twice a year.
Yeah.
You're talking about basically $10 is your fuel cost for the entire year. I want people to imagine if you lived in a world where energy was essentially free, your house was solar power, your car was what I'm talking about, an electric car battery that can refurnish itself. Maybe you have a little bit of wind power as a backup. Maybe there's some nuclear for your main city grids and things like that that are going to be too much power for solar and wind. But your energy costs are basically free. You get on a plane to fly Delta across the country, you're talking about $50 is not off your ticket price. You order something right. from UPS, you're talking about you don't pay the fuel cost. You'll get on a Carnival cruise, you're not paying the fuel cost. You go on a car trip from across America. Say Brody and Michael want to do a round America trip for Hillary's inauguration, or like between now and the end of the podcast, but go around the country to be correspondents for which states are voting which way. Right now we can't do it because gas is too much. If fuel costs are free, but like, hey, nothing's stopping us. So people could do anything they want. They could take a vacation. They could have cheaper airfare. They could have cheaper shipping costs. Walmart, think about this, Walmart. Your shipping costs are essentially free on all your merchandise. This is the kind of thing that really frees an economy. When people talk about getting rid of fossil fuels is going to kill our economy, no, we're going to free it in a way that you can't even imagine right now. If you're talking about the amount of money you spend on, you specifically, how much do you think you spend on gas a month?
Probably $200 a month.
That's with it being low. God forbid Trump gets into the White House and it goes to $5 a gallon, okay? It being, or Bush, back when Bush was I had to quit a job towards the end of the Bush presidency. I had about an hour commute like you. Gas was $4 a gallon. I had to quit a job. Because it didn't make sense to go there anymore. I was actually losing money on fuel costs. For most people, maybe $200-$300 a month, somewhere around there. And if it goes back up to $4 a gallon, you're talking about $500,000 a month in fuel costs.
Yeah.
All these Republicans talking about tax cuts. Hey, I'm gonna get you a tax cut. I'm gonna give you $100 rebate or whatever. No, you can just make fuel free, and I can save $5,000 to $10,000 a year on fuel costs. That'll be way better than any tax cuts you could offer me up.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they don't ever. I bet if you said that to one of these Tea Party congressmen, hey, I got that tax cut you want. Oh, you know what? That's small change. Let me have the fuel cost back free or whatever. Plus, you can give me the fuel cost that because you got an electricity bill. All these things that, like, you're paying for right now. I mean, in the summertime, you have air conditioning. In the wintertime, you got heat. You can have all that money back. You're talking about, for the average individual person, you might be talking about between $5,000 to $10,000 a year. For a family, it may be even more than that. I cannot imagine all that money let loose and flooded back into the marketplace. It would be an actual revolution in terms of consumerism and buying things.
Going back to our previous podcast, does America need a revolution? Yeah, we need that kind of revolution.
Yeah, and you'd be talking about technology that America makes and America owns, that America distributes around the world, because we don't even, America's just never going to be this big exporter of natural gas. That's what they've been setting us up for. They're like, oh, well, oil, that doesn't work out because you got the Middle East, you got Saudi Arabia. Hell, we even import oil from Mexico. When you have a country like Mexico that we have to import oil from, that's how you know we're never going to lead the charge in terms of importing oil.
Yeah.
When you take all that out of the economy, and then you start adding in our green jobs and our green technology, you start talking about car batteries that can refurnish themselves. You start talking about advanced solar panels that are thin enough, they're almost like stickers, and you can practically paste one to the roof of your car. You're talking about things we make, that we have. Everybody's talking about all the manufacturing jobs that have went overseas. Yeah, sure. We'll probably never get some of those back. Like people in DeKalb County who used to make socks and all that's went to Mexico and Belize. I don't know that we're ever going to have a low enough standard of living to take jobs making socks back from Belize. Like, I don't know if we can do that, but I'm pretty sure we can have high enough that we can take these green jobs that don't exist and make them exist. And that's what you got to do. I mean, right now, Republicans are like, hey, if we just drive wages down low enough, we can compete with Malaysia. Well, I don't want to compete with Malaysia. I want to compete with Japan and Germany and these countries that are really going to be killing it with this stuff. Israel, talking about drought and all this stuff, where's the future economic success? Is it going to be China? Is it going to be India? Is it going to be Brazil? It could be any one of those countries, but I think it might be Israel. And the reason I say that is because they figured out the way to basically desalinate water. When you're talking about what's water running out of, fresh water, what's running out of, clean water, Israel's developed a way to basically get water cleaner, more of it, take all the salt out of it, all these things like that. And they're going to be able to export this technology as the rest of the world's running out of water. Then they've got this patent and they've got all these things that are basically like, hey, Iran, you hate us? Well, turns out we've got water and you don't. How much do you like us now? You know, and they're able to sell, like, oh, shit. I mean, I could just say that right now. All these countries like Libya and Syria and Iran having to write checks to Israel, being like, fucking Israel, you know, and they're writing these checks to them and getting that clean water that they need. So they've kind of got it figured out to where really these things are, the United States burying their head in the sand and acting like this is not coming and this is not happening and this is not going on. We got to figure out a way to innovate around these problems. And really, I know Democrats have talked about the Green Revolution. And that may sound like, I could just say that now. Democrats talking about Green Revolution. It shows what Republicans think, and there's a bunch of Frenchmen with green berets and like a communist sign on the flag being like, the Green Revolution, let's take all their money. This is happening, and it's going to happen. And when you take all the jobs that we have right now, agriculture, ranching, fisheries, park rangers, all these forest jobs that we need. Alabama has a big thing with the forest departments and all this. And when you have forest fires break out, firemen have to come in and put out a whole mountaintop or whatever. It's just not sustainable to keep living this way.
Right.
Liberals, usually they don't like nuclear power. Nuclear power is a dirty word. I can see that, and I can see the fears of nuclear power. But I did see a documentary called Pandora's Promise that might be worth looking up. I don't know if it's on Netflix anymore. CNN showed it for free one night. Sometimes I think the programming head at CNN is just like, fuck it. Put on what you want to, you know. Whenever they don't have a breaking news story, I mean, you turn on CNN, you don't know if you're going to see Anderson Cooper, or one night I turned on, they had a documentary about Roger Ebert on there, Life Itself. And I mean, it was a good movie, but I was like, why is this on CNN? I'm not really sure. But
yeah,
weather pattern, maybe. They might have Trump on there. They might have Pandora's Promise. But the whole documentary was about how the oil companies have really spread a lot of propaganda about nuclear power to try to kill it and try to get people afraid of it. And even in the worst nuclear power disaster, Three Mile Island, Fukushima, Chernobyl, nobody actually died from that. And yet at the same time, when we talk about Deepwater Horizon, half a dozen people died immediately. And even more than that, have died from all the cancer that's been let loose since then. I don't know that nuclear power is really the boogeyman people think it is. And when it comes to individual use for our homes, I think we can get by without it. But when it comes to massive cities like New York City and Tokyo and Shanghai, things like that, you may need some nuclear power to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, when used properly, it's fine. I think people are afraid of nuclear. When they hear nuclear power, they automatically assume nuclear weapon. I think that's why a lot of people are a little turned off on it.
No, I think you're right. I think that they, back in the 60s, they kind of associated nuclear power with nuclear weapons. There was a big anti-nuclear kind of movement. And I think the oil companies helped fuel that because it was all about getting rid of any. You'd see like some oil company guy wearing like a hard hat and he'd put on like a fake hippie, like a peace symbol and be like, yeah, down with nuclear, up with oil. Wait a minute, up with oil. We didn't ask for that. I think that they fed into it. I think that they kind of helped promote this idea that nuclear power is dangerous, that it can melt down at any minute. But Three Mile Island and Chernobyl and Fukushima, those are by far the worst nuclear power disasters, and they didn't kill anybody, not one person.
Right.
One last thing to consider is that when people act like getting rid of oil is a scary thing, keep in mind that almost every major enemy of the United States is dependent on oil. Russia, Iran, ISIS, Libya. You look at OPEC and the countries that are members of OPEC, it looks like a roll call of the world's shittiest, you know, countries. I mean, OPEC looks like Spectre from the James Bond movies. All you need is Goldfinger at the head of the table or something. I mean, it really is a roll call of villains. And so when you talk about why has Obama's foreign policy worked, I think driving oil prices down has helped him more than, it's helped him more than any army ever could. Because a country like Russia, which is completely, John McCain, he made that joke a dozen times that, you know, Russia is a gas station pretending to be a country. I mean, John McCain, you know, if he makes the funny, everybody's got to hear about it. I mean, I'd be like, well, Lindsey Graham loves this one when we're in bed together. He cracks him up. But like, when they said that about Russia, I mean, there is a truth that Russia's main export is oil. Now that oil prices are so low, they've had to make a lot of compromises. Iran, you could argue that this deal we made with Iran might not have been possible if oil had been high and they had a big stock of, you know, like they wanted to make this deal because they're cash poor.
Yeah.
They're running out of money.
Yeah.
Libya, same thing. ISIS obviously depends on oil to keep their operations going. You can make a case that a lot of our major enemies are pretty much totally dependent on oil. Well, what if you take the largest consumer of oil, America, second largest consumer of oil, China. You take this out of that. We're part of the Green Revolution. China's got all the rare minerals that we need to make our devices, but we make our devices, we sell it to the rest of the world. You take this completely out of the oil pipeline, you're going to see a lot of countries eat some humble pie pretty fast.
Right.
So economic revolution, security revolution, we should do it. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueAndAlabama.com.
Of course, you can find me at AlabamaLiberal.com. Join us next time when we'll be talking about the media. Thanks for listening, everybody.